Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. Today I talked to Cam Guthrie. You may know him as the mayor of Guelph, but most people just know him as Cam. This is a conversation I've wanted to have with the mayor for a long time. Not a discussion about issues or things that are presently in front of city council awaiting for a decision, but a talk about how the mayor thinks and how his thinking might have changed in the last 5 years since becoming mayor. This became a much more prescient conversation last Friday when Guthrie announced in the State of the City that he wanted to forward two initiatives, one for free transit for Guelph's youth and another for a car-free downtown. Is this the same Cam Guthrie that was first elected in 2014? We're going to ask him. Going inside the mind of Cam Guthrie is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. The 2014 election seems like it happened in a simpler time. The contest that year was a pretty obvious divide between the left-wing politics of incumbent Karen Farbridge and the slightly more right-leaning shift represented by Cam Guthrie. Then Councillor Guthrie talked a lot about respecting the taxpayer, living within our means, and eliminating the Guelph factor, which was preventing businesses from developing and getting things done in the city. It was a sensible center-right kind of fiscal conservative platform that would appeal to Guelph-based suburbanites, especially after the long and costly legal fight around the canceling of Urbicon's contract to build the new city hall midway through construction. To many in Farbridge's camp, Guthrie was seen as the smiling dad joke version of Rob Ford in his vision of municipal politics, which was car-centric, sprawl-centric, and with little concern for environmental issues, social mobility, active transportation, or any other kind of public policy that leaned to the progressive side, or what some cynics might have called social engineering. Some of the criticism of Guthrie from those quarters could have been filed under the fallacy of reductio ad absurdum, but in 2014, it's unlikely that anyone could have imagined the day when Guthrie would stand in front of the Chamber of Commerce and announce his intention to make downtown car-free. It's also unlikely that anyone would have guessed that the same Cam Guthrie who took part in the politicking for local conservative campaigns would have been one of the loudest critics of Ontario's conservative government. Has politics changed? Or has Guthrie? That's one of the many questions we'll try to get an answer to on this week's Guelph Politicast. Mayor Cam Guthrie sits down for what will hopefully be a wide-ranging discussion about how he got political, how he would describe his own politics, and whether or not he thinks those politics might have changed in the last few years he's been mayor. We also talk about his engagement on social media, why that matters, and how he handles criticism, including the critiques that would tend to be more to the outrageous side of political commentary. We also discuss his desire for council consensus, taking the provincial stage as the chair of the Large Urban Mayors Caucus of Ontario, and what he thinks the future may hold in terms of his own ambitions and how he will be remembered for his time as Guelph's mayor. So I caught up with Mayor Cam Guthrie earlier this week in studio. So Mayor Cam Guthrie, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to talk about your political mind. I guess to start...
Uh-oh, you're going to lose a lot of listeners.
you never know. You never know what appeals in this business. But like,
all right.
But to start with, you know, I feel it's, you know, important to go back to the beginning. And so when you remember your past, you know, when do you first remember about getting political and, you know, feeling political and wanting to get involved in politics?
So actually, I do remember. I think I was around 15 or 16 years old, and I remember actually calling Gloria Kovac at home.
Oh, yeah.
Because at that time, Gloria was and the family was going to the same church as I, and so I would see her in the family like every Sunday, and then I guess I started talking about it at my house with my parents and stuff, and I believe it was my dad who said, you should call Gloria Kovac and just see what, you know, how it works. Mm-hmm. And so I did, and she promptly reminded me that you had to be 18. she was super positive to speak to me as a, you know, 15 or 16 year old who was interested. And then from there, my dad got into helping out with, and I'm just trying to remember what the name of the person was. I think it might have been Jerry Organ, who was was it Alliance? Canadian Alliance or Reform? I can't remember. One of those.
Yeah. If it was around 2000, it would have been Alliance. It would have been a reformer out before.
Yeah.
That.
And And I didn't know anything about what was going on at all, but I was being dragged out to put up signs at night with my dad, right? You know, hold this, you know, and then so that just kind of started me asking questions. You know, what did the person, what does this candidate believe in? Like, what is it? What does the other one believe in? And then from there, actually, my dad just didn't do anything more. But I think that kind of that bug of talking to Gloria and helping out with that, it just got me kind of involved to see what was this politics thing all about. So I've always, since a very young age, been very interested.
It's interesting hearing you talk about that after the last couple of weeks and taking young people under your wing during the school strikes. That it seems like... You're revisiting yourself a bit.
The circle of life. Yeah. I really do love talking to young people and encouraging. I sincerely do, very authentic, because I think that there are a lot of misconceptions out there about politicians in general, all stripes, and it's only for, you know, those older people, and I'm doing air quotes right now for those listening, and I really like to encourage them that we need people that are passionate about serving in this way and get involved very early, young. You can make a difference, and then it can maybe propel you to an opportunity to be elected later on.
What kind of misconceptions are you thinking about?
Well, I think some of it is that, you know, those in our position don't care about the younger generation or don't want to listen to them or engage with them or we, you know, are accused of we know it all.
Right.
And I just think that those misconceptions need to be broken down. That's why I have them in my office. I have them call. I go to schools all the time, primary, high school, all the time here at the university. Speaking with as many, you know, students, young people as possible to let them know sort of, I guess it's more educational how things really work,
right?
What jurisdictions a municipality has or does not, what the role of a mayor is, how much power a mayor has, you know, shockingly, none. and then what kind of differences they can make in the community, again, elected or not, but how they can engage with me, I think is important.
There's a lot to unpack there, but I'll start with this in terms of the misconception you're talking about what the limits of power are.
Mm-hmm.
And from your experience talking to young people, what is missing from maybe the education angle of this? Because, you know, maybe they're talking to you and it might be the first time somebody's actually presented to them the sausage making of what it looks like to be at City Hall. And I know from my own conversations with people, there's a lot of difficulty for people to get into the process because they're not sure how to begin.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it does start, you know, usually from an educational point of view. And so the way I usually start, because I get asked this a lot, and so I'm going to just say what I always say, is we tend to be so involved with watching Hollywood movies, U.S. television, U.S. TV stations, that type of thing. And mayors are, we grow up with this sense of what mayors are, all powerful. They can fire people. They can fire and hire the chief of police. They can boss the chief of police around. They can veto what their counselors do. And so that misconception, from what we are inundated with from Hollywood and from U.S. channels, then bleeds into naturally what we think a mayor is like here in Canada. And I talk very much about the strong mayor system in the States versus the weak mayor system up in Canada, where the mayor does not have those powers at all. And it's more about trying to have collaboration, trying to compromise, trying to bring people around common visions, more facilitation of meetings, spokesperson roles. It's really, that is what a mayor does in Canada. And as much as maybe mayors across Canada would like to have more power, whether it's a little bit or a lot,
right,
this is the way this governance and this structure works. And when I explain that sort of American versus Canada scenario, it really does, like, the lights go off on everyone I explain that to, whether young or old, actually.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, okay, I get it. So now, you know, I don't have to yell at you because you didn't do anything. It's always up to council, and I'm more of a governance role as the chair and spokesperson and trying to get everyone around a vision. And then, but ultimately, at the end of the day, it's still up to council because I'm only one vote.
Having said that, though, would you prefer a stronger mayor system?
I can see not as much as the U.S., I think maybe some say in hiring and firing of executive teams, or some say in regards to chairs of different committees. That might be something that could be interesting. I think when a mayor, whoever the mayor is elected by the entirety of the city,
right,
there should be some consideration given to what that vision it was of whoever the mayor was that was running and was elected. And I think there is some room to probably have that conversation. I don't think veto power, I don't think the hiring and firing of a police chief, or I'm not suggesting we go there, but there has been discussion over several years of, you know, mayors that get elected by a whole city under a certain vision or framework that they want to bring.
Right.
And then the councilors are completely unaligned. There can be a disconnect there, but I don't think it should be like the all powerful like it is in the States,
right? Because people might hear it drives me back to the whole debate over the slate back in 2018, and to an extent, you know, you as mayor, and I would agree with that. You are elected by a whole city, which presumes that. It's that
there's
governing
some
vision.
Commonality.
There's some commonality.
Yeah.
I'm wondering though how you sort of navigate that, because the onus then becomes on you with the system it is to, you were the one who was elected by an entire city to guide by your vision that you ran on, but different enclaves of the city. And sometimes it's a case too that, you know, people who might have voted for you might have also voted for a city councilor
who
would be an opposition to some of the things you were campaigning on. And so, and I know this is important to you to rule by consensus and to get a majority of council or the entirety of council behind you. But how do you make that work?
It really does. I said it already. It's about compromise. Once the election is over, it's over. The elected councilors are duly elected, and so am I. And we just got to get to work for the city. And it does mean sometimes as much as it is my focus to always compromise, there are some times where you know that you just may not have the votes. You just might not be able to actually get something that is something that you ran on in the way that you wanted to have it implemented. And that's okay. I think, I don't know, I've said this to my wife and now I'm saying it to the world. I think I believe I have matured a lot since becoming the mayor and understanding the role. And really, like, this term I felt has been way better than the last term, just from the relationship point of view, from letting things go, you know, and understanding that's just one person's opinion and this is another person's opinion. And, you know, you can be a little bit disappointed for half an hour or whatever after a vote or something. But at the end of the day, it's like there's so much on our list. Just get going. And so I have actually really enjoyed this term of council, getting to actually know better all of the personalities around the table. I felt that being more proactive to reach out to those other councilors this term has been better. And I think the city is better for it, because I think the decisions are actually been better because of sort of relationship building and letting things go. And it's been ultimately at the end of the day, it's good personally. But when it comes to decision making, it's going to be good for the city.
Does it help that there was actually not a lot of turnover, that, you know, you're still working with 10 out of the 12.
I think so, actually. Hindsight being 2020, that's a great question. Yes, because it's not like, hi, my name is, and you're reaching across the table trying to shake someone's hand. It's you know the quirks of everybody a little bit more, and just as much as they know mine. And of course, you know, relationships do sometimes take time. And so now we're into, you know, year 5 maybe with some of them, or I'm year 10 with some of them, right? I think it's been... you raise a good point. I think it might be easier just because we've known the turnover was not so great.
Right.
Yeah.
As an observer, been watching you chair the meetings, and it strikes me a lot. You are very much about council talking with one voice. And, you know, it may be subconscious on your part, but one of the things I often hear you talking about is like, I would like a unanimous vote on this.
Yes.
And I think I understand why, but I'm curious about how, or the reasons why you want to get there, because I think by nature, and especially in some of the most controversial things, they are going to be inherently divisive.
Sure.
And so how do you balance the notion of council speaking with one voice when sometimes you are going to get those 7-6 votes? I mean, a lot of people put an emphasis that on the 7-6 votes, like this is a council divided, but
no.
That's the way the cookie crumbles when you're talking about like difficult issues.
Yeah. Well, 13 personalities are going to come with 13 different opinions. And I totally get that. I think where I don't mind the friction and the debate and the discussion is prior to the vote. And so if we can accomplish compromise or amendments to motions or things like that, where what I'm trying to do is if at the beginning of a meeting, I'm trying to step by step move people, filter into the center of a decision. So bringing people on this side together as much as I can through the debate process. And so when I get to the very end and I'm asking for a unanimous vote, what I'm really saying is hey, we might have started, in opposites, but over the last hour, we've moved close enough here to you've given a little bit, counselor, whoever, you've given a little bit, I've given a little bit. So because we've all given a little bit here, why don't we have a unanimous vote here to acknowledge that we've moved from maybe oppositional places into the middle. And so the other thing too is with unanimous votes is it does send a signal of unity around a decision where it's maybe not as easy then for councilors or mayors to beat each other up after a vote is taken when it is unanimous too. So it eliminates some of that. However, of course, when there are divisions, it's around what I've always said, it's around policy. It should be around policy, not personality or the person. And so I can see where I vote yes for something and someone votes no, and I'm totally fine with that because I could totally see why they did that. And I hope that they see it the other way around too. Right. But as I said, once the vote is taken, there's so much on the list. We got to get moving on to the next issues. So really, I don't have time to really stew in stuff anymore. I've recognized not only is it the right governance role to have, but also we've got 20 other things on our plate. Let's get going. Let's get going to the next issue.
But and so much of the politics is personal now.
I don't know. I have not seen it really this term at all. I was just talking to a counselor this morning about this actually, and I've just really enjoyed this term so far. Yeah.
It may be a matter of people in the public. I mean, when you get to know your colleagues fairly well.
Yeah.
You at least spend a couple of hours with them every week.
Yes. It's more than a couple.
But, maybe it's something that's more on the public end, too. People ascribe such feeling. We're recording this on Tuesday. Yesterday was the planning meeting. And especially in those kind of meetings when you have people who are like, this is my neighborhood.
Yeah, sure.
I'm deeply concerned about this. And then sometimes the decision doesn't go their way.
Yes, yes.
And
so you're right. That from that perspective, it can be – I'm sorry. I maybe took your question as more personality conflicts within council.
No. Yeah.
You're right. Their personalities – I mean, that could happen, I guess, in council. I hope it doesn't. But yes, from the public perspective, it becomes personal. And I can understand both from the citizen point of view and the representatives from their ward, especially if it does affect them. Whatever the impacts are, it can be a positive or negative to each individual's point of view. But that is democracy. That's why we're elected to make the decisions. And sometimes they go the way that people want them, and sometimes they don't. And you move on. You just got to keep moving forward.
I'm wondering how you can help people move on. I mean, not the people in council, but like the people. And I've been at more than a few planning meetings where people will shuffle out after a decision, grumbling I can't believe it. City Hall wins. What can be done, do you think, to maybe get people to see the bigger picture? Because I know that's part of what's going on in these deliberations too.
Yeah, I mean, even in your question, you probably raised something for me to kind of take back to City Hall is what can we do more proactively in advance?
Yeah.
I think perhaps, I'm just thinking off the top of my head here, but I think it's more educational moments.
Yeah.
I think when we or staff are presenting a planning document or a planning development application, maybe we need to have a 1-minute sort of high level. So just so everyone knows, we have to be 191,000 people by 2041.
Right.
The province has legislation that mandates that Guelph grow, da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
We have policies in place that have greenfield development and infill.
Yeah.
And this, da-da-da-da-da. So it sets the stage for people maybe then understanding like, oh, so that's why it's a six-story building. Or, oh, that's why it's got to be higher.
Mm.
Or, oh, that's why there's less parking. Almost from an educational point of view up front, I think we could probably do a better job at that.
Yeah.
I intend to try to do that a bit more. I try to do that as much as possible, but I can understand, you know, people are busy in their own lives, right?
In their
own neighborhood. They've been there for 15 years, 20 years, whatever it is, and they're just going to work, and they're just coming home, and they're taking their kids to soccer practice, and then all of a sudden they're like, what, there's a six-story building going on, but everything's fine. Why do we need that?
Right.
I don't think we're answering the question of why very well sometimes, and we maybe need to do it a lot more proactively.
I wonder if this is where maybe accessibility comes into play too, because a lot of people have mentioned you are fairly accessible as mayor on social media. You post a lot. You share a lot.
Yeah.
Has that helped, do you think, that education aspect? That's one part of it.
Yes, I think so.
And
yeah. The
other part of it too is, and I see it a lot in like the Facebook post, Twitter post, the negative feedback.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I would acknowledge some of it is critical, fair, but critical. But
yeah.
Some of it is just not. And how do you kind of cope with that, like psychologically? Because, you know, you're talking a lot about we take the vote, we leave it on the field, go back, and we move on to the next thing. That is not the attitude sometimes on social media.
It's not. So I will completely and openly admit that I am really struggling staying on social media.
Oh.
Over the last year and a bit, I have probably been close about 10 times to say I'm out of here.
That's a fascinating confession because people identify you so much from
media
interaction.
You said the words psychologically.
Yeah.
It is it has become overwhelming.
Mm.
And it's and I will point out Facebook is the worst. It is the worst.
You've taken the census and
it is it's unbelievable what has said there. You know, my Instagram I keep as just fun. It's just fun.
Yeah.
I don't engage there hardly at all. Just pictures fun. I purposely do that. And Twitter is definitely where I'm having conversations like all day long. And it's okay. I would say it's mostly in the realm of critical but fair, as you just defined it.
Yeah.
You know, over the summer I did take I think about 2 months off of Twitter, I think, and Facebook, and I never felt better. and it's unfortunate, I think, for a couple of reasons. One is that when I became the mayor, I think I only had about 7,000 followers.
Mm.
I have 40, with all my platforms together, over 40,000 now.
Right.
And so it is, imagine just every day, like 40,000 people instantly having access to you.
Right.
And we live in a I want information now world.
Yeah.
And so I'm at work. Like I'm in meetings.
Yeah.
I'm at Queen's Park lobbying for money, or like I'm doing my mayor stuff.
Right.
And as much as social media is mayor stuff, it's extracurricular. And so for people get upset, like, why aren't you answering me?
Why aren't you?
And it's like, I'm doing my work for you in my city hall.
Yeah.
Me getting back to you a day later on social media is, I think, pretty good.
Yeah.
A pretty good response rate, right? So I'm still going to continue to engage on it because it is a great way of educating, answering, and getting the pulse check of the community on things. I do that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about this kind of questions, this issue or that? But the negativity is becoming almost overbearing. As I said, very honestly, I've been very close several times to saying, you know what, forget it. You want to get a hold of me, you just have to email the mayor's office now. And that's the way it's going to be. Because I don't have any staff that do any social media. It's just me.
It's all you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that may be another matter of...
Here I am venting, like I'm... like. Is there a couch I can lie on here with you, Adam?
I thought about bringing one in. It seemed to be that. I was sort of building that kind of conversation. But what you're getting at, though, is another piece of the misunderstanding, because people have the image of the mayor's office as an entity.
Yes.
And they may not think that it's your phone that's digging. They might think it's your assistant's phone that's digging.
Yeah, no, it's me.
It's you.
Yeah.
And, you know, you are in a meeting with maybe the Minister of Municipal Affairs,
yes,
and you can't
100%.
Respond to Kingsbury 479 right away.
Sure, that's right. Yeah, with zero followers and an egg as their profile picture.
That's right. I do want to talk more about criticism and negativity, and I brought a prop to illustrate this. And this is to get at some of the stuff you're talking about at the State of the City, because I find it very interesting, your evolution here.
Okay.
So what I have here is two political cartoons that were posted about you in the 2014 mayor's race, and they are not flattering.
Oh.
And there are some very blatant...
Let me see these.
There are some blatant comparisons to Rob Ford.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering... Well, first of all, I'll ask you this. When you saw those the first time when you were running for mayor, what were you thinking? In terms of the caricature of you that they presented?
Well, the one on the right here I have on my fridge to remind me to not allow the naysayers to bring me down.
Yeah.
You know what? I didn't really care. I was knocking on doors and talking to people about what the real issues were. And they threw everything they could at me, including cartoons, and I still won. So I don't mean that overly.
You don't mean that flippantly,
no,
but.
You know what? From a strategy point of view, I love political strategy.
Mm-hmm.
I thought instead of letters to the editor, having these sent in, I thought it was kind of a neat idea, actually.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll describe them for people. One is by Gareth Lind, who people may remember from the Welsh Mertz strip that was in Echo for years. And it's you standing in front of a store called Sprawl Mart with cars everywhere, and it's urban blight because there's cars and driving everywhere, and you couldn't the image of you couldn't be happier. And in this one, you are literally reading the Rob Ford playbook.
Yeah,
I don't think Rob Ford would come out in favor of car-free downtown.
I would agree with you.
I'm wondering, and appreciating these are caricatures and these are political cartoons, and so there's a certain amount of exaggeration, but I don't think 2014 Cam Guthrie would have made that 2020 State of the City speech.
Really, eh?
What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're a little bit right. And maybe that gets back to the point where I said maybe you have matured a little bit. people are like, yeah, just a little. I think you're right. I think I think I came in really, you know, a guns a-blazing, if I could say it in that way, you know, through the bar doors, you know, coming through to sort of really turn things on its head. And
yeah.
I tried a little bit. But I also felt like the first term was really around cleaning a lot of stuff up. There was
sure.
a lot of stuff that was around cleaning stuff up. And this term is more like, okay, that stuff's done now.
Mm.
Now I can really have a feeling of how do I want to leave this city in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years down the road? And I think over the last several years, I've been just doing a lot of my own research about what makes for healthy cities, healthy downtowns, you know, increased tourism, economic development. And it's not, as that cartoon says,
right.
is, you know, big shopping malls.
Yeah.
It's the data. I'm very data driven.
Yeah.
And so the research and the data and the statistics bear out that it's actually the opposite of that.
Yeah.
And so I don't mind championing that kind of stuff because I just know it's right.
It does speak to how quickly the market has sort of turned,
mm-hmm.
where you could still...
In 2014, sorry
yeah.
to jump in. Like,
no, no, yeah.
I mean, Amazon was not even like, I mean, I never even used Amazon in 2014.
No, me neither.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, just in 5 or 6 years or whatever, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
The changes in just the retail market.
Yeah. How would you, like, at what point would you say that your expectations for what you would be able to do as mayor change in sort of being able to navigate what you were able to do?
Yeah.
What point did the I guess the veil fall and you realize yeah. what exactly the tools you had to work with.
Yeah, I mean, I know exactly what it is, so it's easy. It's trying to keep taxes at the rate of inflation or less. I mean, that, you know, I actually thought going into that term that I had the votes for that.
Mm.
And one of the members of council surprised me and didn't agree. And so that's immediately where I knew. I mean, that was a maturing moment, if I could say that right away, to say, mm-hmm. yeah, you're not in charge here, Cam. This is as much as you want it to be the Cam show. It's not. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. a council. It's lots of opinions. And so I think that was the moment right there in my last term where it's like, you can't really promise. A mayor can't really promise anything unless you have council votes.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a moment for sure where I, where it hit me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, I think it was actually, as much as I didn't like it, I think it was an opportunity for the public at large to understand municipal politics a lot better.
Sure.
How it actually works.
Is that shoe a bit on the other foot now because you have two new counselors who are coming in and maybe have their own ideas? And are you seeing maybe a bit of the old you coming in with maybe counselors O'Rourke and Galler, you know, who are bringing in their own ideas and maybe realizing they're part of the machine too?
Well, first of all, they've been a great addition to council. And you know what? A fresh set of eyes on anything, just being the two of them, is always helpful. You know, they voted for some things and against some things opposite to me, which is normal. You know, I think a lot of it is still they're learning.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that totally respectfully. I mean, I was the same.
Mm.
But they are both eager to learn, which is very nice to see. So they're asking a ton of questions, both to me and to staff and to their fellow counselors. And so that dynamic has been really nice, actually.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to go back into negative territory a bit.
Okay.
But you mentioned
veer back into negativity. All right.
it's part of the job, and I mean you enjoy, I think, a better than average level of popularity. A lot of people like you. A lot of people, they may not always agree with you, but I think they like you as a person. I wonder if you have thought about the day when maybe that turns and mm-hmm. wondered what is the end of your cachet and what happens at that day when maybe – and I don't mean to – it's the people who peck at you on social media, the eggs and things like that. But like the majority of the city who maybe see the end of the Guthrie era and maybe are looking to – who can lead the city next? Have you thought about that day?
No. Not really. This is, in all seriousness, I tend not to think about sort of election stuff. Mm. I park it. I literally, this is something I honestly think I'm good at.
Mm.
I know how to just park stuff. Like it's, so the election's done. And now I'm working for the city every day. Whether someone voted for me or not, will I start thinking about it during re-election time if an opportunity presents itself to continue to run again? Then, then of course I would think about it. What's next, right? Mm. I'm a younger mayor. And so is this a career I want to do for my whole life? I don't know. I and that's fair to say. I don't know. And, it depends on the week, depends on the day, sometimes it depends on the hour, but in overall, the last 10 years have been amazing. When I think back, oh my goodness, all the stuff that we've been involved in, both as a counselor and as the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at whenever that moment comes, whether it's me that chooses it or the voters that choose it, I just really hope that I am remembered as someone that tried the best for the city. That's a big integrity thing with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like me or not, I hope that people know that I was trying to make it better.
But you are still thinking about legacy because you said that part of the whole idea of Car Free Downtown is about you leaving a legacy.
Yeah. I would, I haven't talked a lot about vision in my term, and it's because I think maybe, as I said, the last term was a lot about just fixing stuff up.
Right.
And so now I just feel a bit more freedom to be able to think about vision and leaving a legacy. And I think, you know, a South End Rec Center is a legacy thing for me. The Baker Street development is a legacy thing for me. And but those are ribbon cutting things. Mm. Those are big infrastructure things. Mm-hmm. A car-free downtown is more of a cultural, you know, it's not something you cut a ribbon on. It's right. It's like a it's like a real legacy of a cultural change to be people-focused, not car-focused in the downtown core. And that's pretty, to me, I think it's great. I hope that it's embraced by everybody else.
And it's something that'll take time. It's not something like this will be the day.
No. I said in my speech, I said, what about 10 years from now? I literally said that in my speech, word for word. What about 10 years from now, do we want our city to be this kind of just a little bit better in the downtown or a lot better? And so, yeah, small little steps as we go would be wonderful to have us try out.
Yep. Does it concern you about what people might think about a mayor with a vision? Because I think that goes into a lot of back when you were first elected was that your predecessor was focused on the vision and not so much on the immediacy of the implementation and what's going on the day to day. Are you worried that people might start thinking of you as someone who's too focused on the vision?
No, not at all. I no matter if this vision comes to fruition or not, and I hope it does, but I am literally, like, every day I'm thinking on the tactical everyday stuff that matters to people. I call it front porch issues. Mm. So, like, literally the potholes, the crack in the sidewalk, the garbage pickup, you know, the tax dollars being spent, and I am still really championing that. I'm excited every day to be trying to figure out ways of saving money, doing things more efficiently, getting private sector involvement. I really am trying to do that every day. And that hasn't waned or lessened since I've been a counselor 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. I can multitask. I can do a vision and still be on top of the everyday stuff.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask, are you ambitious?
Yes.
And where... Because I hear it a lot from people in the community that Cam is ambitious. He's biding his time as mayor, and then it's going to be off to Queen's Park or Parliament Hill. Do you think about that ever?
I actually only think about it when I get asked. So, sure. Absolutely. It has come up, Adam. It comes up a lot by others like that are asking, right? So... I'm getting a lot of encouragement, just as I had encouragement to run for mayor.
Mm.
The same encouragement comes to me all the time to run for both provincial and federal.
Yeah.
At this time, I am not interested at all. I love being able to be at home with my kids and Rachel, and that to me is more important than to be far away in Ottawa or in at Queen's Park, which still to me is now considered far away because of how bad it is the traffic is.
Might as well be.
I'm focused on being the mayor and making a difference here. And, you know, I would say that, you know, this tends to be more, I think, that you can do on the ground level at a municipal level of change, unless you're given a role, some kind of a role in a provincial or a federal government.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would be happy.
Yeah.
I don't want to be happy with what I'm doing. I want to be making a difference. I feel like the mayor role allows me to make a difference a lot more than probably party politics does.
I will share a bit of insight that when I had that conversation with people, I've said, I'm not entirely convinced Cam would like to be an MPP or an MP because I think he enjoys being seen doing more as the mayor. Whereas once you get into those higher levels, you become part of a chorus.
Yeah.
Which
is the way it works. Right. I understand it.
Yeah. And that's another... perhaps a positive comparison between you and Rob Ford. You may not like it, but, you know, when I talk about Rob Ford's legacy, and a lot of people look back at Rob Ford and say, oh, he could have been prime minister. And I think to myself, he would have been miserable doing that. Because for him, It was about the potholes. It was about the filling the potholes and the front porch stuff.
It was about giving out the cell phone number to call. And it's, you know, I adopt all of that.
Yeah.
I adopted it from him. That's the way I've always been.
Retail politics, yeah.
But before I was even in, like, when I was in insurance, like, here's my cell phone number. Give me a call if there's ever a problem. Like,
yeah.
If you're in an accident, give me a call. Like, so, like, I just transferred all that kind of customer service stuff.
It's good business.
It is.
Yeah.
But it's also not just business. It's right. It's customer service.
Mm.
And we don't have to be up in some ivory tower somewhere and not, you know, engaging with people. And the mayor's role, and just to back to your question, really facilitates that sort of customer service opportunity a lot more so than, you know, at Queen's Park or up in Ottawa. Maybe down the road, but I have all doors open. Like, mayor, not mayor, politics, not politics. Maybe my modeling career will take off, Adam.
I hate to tell you.
It should have taken off already.
I hate to tell you, they don't make the Sears catalog anymore. I know.
But, I was hoping for consumers distributing.
That's
calculators. That's where I got my calculators.
That might be a deeper cut than the Sears catalog.
Yeah, yeah.
You are now currently the chair of LUMCO. You've been doing that for a year, and I think you have another year left in the term. You are kind of existing in those worlds now. You are kind of dealing with those upper levels of government in a more formal way than just being mayor.
Yep.
Has that, maybe this is the wrong way to phrase this, but has that maybe even turned you off more, the idea of going for higher level? Like, being that much closer to that level of power, maybe you see the limitations of what being there can do as opposed to what you can do as the mayor of the city.
Well, from being able to implement things, I would actually maybe argue against kind of the premise of your question, because if you have a majority government, then you can literally very easily to get through whatever you want to change.
Sure.
The role with LUMCO and talking to the ministers and being a part of AMO and that it really has been more around collaboration, except for the whole retroactive cuts thing.
Right.
But other than that, it's been around collaboration with the government and trying to make sure that they're hearing the voice of municipalities before they come out with policies and before they can easily pass them because they have the majority, right? So, I haven't been kind of involved with LUMCO or involved with the ministers and from a point of view of how would I like it. Mm. I'm there representing Guelph. Or I'm there representing all the mayors of Ontario for a particular reason. So that's what I'm focused on when I'm walking in the door.
I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, being the mayor, you understand sort of the needs of the city and how to implement those. And being the chair of LUMCO, you're part of a broader chorus and maybe understanding the collective problems. And advocating to a government that... maybe inadvertently, I don't want to, you know, ascribe motivations, but perhaps accidentally in their own drive to get their own things done became kind of an adversary to cities. And this is where I think it doesn't lean to your natural strengths, I think, as a leader to get adversarial. But you had to take on an adversarial role.
Yes.
And again,
yes.
Not to put too fine a point on it, this is a government that could theoretically you would have a home with. You are someone who's on the fiscal side of conservatism.
Yes.
And very much about the keeping your eyes on the dollars and the cents. And it seems like there could have been a better relationship there from the word go, but the circumstances may sort of force you to be more adversarial.
Well, I think number one is I do understand my role.
Yeah.
And I take it really seriously. Like when I you know, put my hand on the Bible and said my oath at inauguration night that I would to be the mayor, like that's an oath. And I take that really seriously. And so my role is to the benefit of the city of Guelph, and no party is going to take that away from me. Same as my role as the chair of LUMCO. I have a role to play. I was elected by all those mayors to be the chair, to be the spokesperson, to go to bat when I have to for the municipalities, and to collaborate when I need to as well. I take those roles extremely seriously. I understand what it means to mm-hmm. be in those roles. And so it wasn't a problem for me to go, you know, adversarial with the government. Mm. It just wasn't a problem mm-hmm. because I know my roles and I was happy to do it. Mm. And I'd do it again tomorrow if I had to.
Mm-hmm. So, you might.
Yeah, and I might. and I might. But I hope this comes across okay. I do really believe that one of the strengths that I have is around relationship building. Mm-hmm. And there's tons of sort of, you know, it's just small stuff behind the scenes. It's just like, hey, like little hallway conversations with people. How are you? And how's it going? And can I help you with anything? And those come back to help later on when you need the help. And and those collaborative, positive relationship buildings with agencies and local governments, provincial, federal, I mean, that's where the strength comes in, not in an adversarial way. We'll be adversarial when we need to, either as the mayor or as the chair of LUMPCO. But you get much further when you can just have, you know, real conversations and relationship building with them all. Mm. You get further for the citizens we're all serving.
Mm-hmm. Build more political connections with honey than with vinegar.
Sure. Yeah, that's, sure. We'll go with that one. Yeah. I mean, the county of Wellington is a perfect example locally.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, but it is. Like, it's,
yeah.
You know, it was 10 years. There's nothing.
Right.
And I came in and I said, I just want to build a relationship. Small baby steps, like just relationship building over and over and over again. And
yeah.
Now I'm back on the committee. It's a huge step. Now I'm getting voting rights. That's a huge step.
Mm.
Huge step.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's relationship building. We did the Smart Cities application together and won it together. That would never have happened 10 years ago.
Mm.
Ever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So relationship building can sometimes take some time. Trust building trust takes some time. But the outcomes to the benefit of the city and the citizens is massive when it all comes together.
Mm-hmm. How do you know when to take a stand, though? When, like, you must have thought, you know, maybe you didn't, but, you know, there are sometimes points. And, you know, I don't think your predecessors started playing hardball with the county with the idea that it would be 10 years before that relationship would be mended. And it's, you know, you can never tell the future, but, you know, what I guess, how do you know when the collaboration doesn't work anymore?
I think when you know you've exhausted everything. And I think in the past, all governments, all predecessors, whatever, have sometimes leapt forward to the legal positioning, lawyering up, and that jumping to those avenues sooner when there's other opportunities to try to figure things out, I think is what has cost everyone, no matter what government level, a lot of money and a lot of wasted time on building relationships. And also, one of the benefits of building relationships is that when an issue comes up then that is difficult, you've created the relationship of respect on both sides to be able to wade through that those difficult circumstances. And that's why I put so much effort into relationship building, because those are going to happen. They actually probably have happened.
Right.
But no one hears about the outcomes because we were able to just work it out because the relationship was strong in advance.
Right.
And so I think it's important to maintain, as I said, a really strong focus on relationship building. And the voters, the citizens, they like that. I mean, they don't want to see the arguing going on all the time. They want to see everyone, if we're all supposed to be serving the public at the end of the day, no matter what level of government it is,
right,
just get along and figure it out, leave me alone, and and I don't want to read about you guys arguing. I want you to put all your focus on trying to help me out.
Right. So there's no the drama factor of it. I mean, it also has its way of, you know, maybe this is playing electoral politics again, but, you know, people like to see their elected representatives fight and fight for them. And, you know, having constructive relationships that are paid off after years of collaboration don't necessarily make headlines.
Yeah, it doesn't. I know that. But that's okay.
So, you know, I guess I don't want you to pit sort of one idea against the other, but it just, you know, how do you make news by not making news? Because part of this is also, you know, promoting stuff is getting done. And I know you've encountered this too on something like the building a grocery store on Starwood.
Yeah.
Where you and Councillor Gibson and Councillor Bell are, you know, talking to people all the time about it. You're in contact with businesses. You're looking at, you know, the city plans and the commercial review process. There's stuff happening all the time that doesn't make headline news because there's no sort of conflict about it.
There's no controversy around it. Yeah, well, as much as I said earlier under the social media question about the people want answers immediately.
Right.
People also, I think, are drawn to controversy as well. So there, and you know, unfortunately, that's sort of the media world that we live in, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's time to start celebrating when there's not any controversy. It means it means that relationships are good, things are good, things are getting done, and you know, I think that's what we should. We should be shining a light more on the, when things are just ticking along. They're going okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And your leaders are elected, no matter what level of government they are. It should be there to try and solve problems, not create controversy.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll wrap up by asking the question like this. As a politician, as a leader, as mayor, what do you still have to work on? Like in terms of building your skill set and the things you want to accomplish, what's on your to-do list? Not necessarily about like policy directives and the goals, but I mean, just like before you leave the stage as the best mayor you could possibly be, what do you think you have to do?
Well, that's a great question. I would say, probably from a governance standpoint, I would like to try to figure out how things can move quicker within government.
Mm.
That's always been a bother for me.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not suggesting you skip processes, stop engagement. See, he doesn't want to talk to anybody. Not at all. I think there's ways of being able to, let's get moving here, folks, get things done. And I think I'm going to say the word continue, because I think I have started in the last couple of years purposely reaching out to maybe those that are adversarial or are of a different stripe to actually engage with them in a meaningful way to understand where they're coming from, what their view is to make Guelph better, and I believe I need to continue to do that because I've actually gained a lot of knowledge and a lot of ideas from people I never would have expected. And so I think it's easy in politics to be divided on purpose. And if I can continue to be more proactive to reaching out to what could be defined as the other side, with quotes on around that, and actually engage on that part, I think that would also be a good thing for me to because then I would know that, because then I would know at the end of the day that I really did it with the whole community, not trying to do it just Cam's way, if I could say it that way.
Well, I think this was enlightening.
Thanks, Adam.
I thank you for. I mean, this was this is not the typical type of media interview that we do.
No, hey, it's great.
But
thanks for bringing up the cartoons there from 5 years ago.
You said you had one on your fridge.
I do have that one on my fridge. Yeah.
But thank you, Cam, for your time and
your
insights.
Welcome.
And
you know what?
Yes,
I'm sorry. I hope I'm not cutting you off.
No.
But I sincerely want to thank you.
Oh.
I hear often from staff, from counselors, from citizens, from my own wife, who loves your live tweeting of council meetings. You do a very good job, and media is forever changing landscape so quickly over the last 10 years, and you've found a good niche, and you've done a very good job.
Oh,
and,
thank you.
I don't like some of your opinion pieces, but that's okay. I'm mature enough to be able to handle that. But no, you've found a good role to play in the community of a place that was needed, and you're doing a very good job of it. And so,
thank you.
I actually sincerely mean it to you. I hope that I hope that people support you in your monthly givings to help with local media and coverage. And please keep doing what you're doing.
Well,
and we'll get the buses, going for you there, okay?
Well, just leave the dollar sign bag in the corner here.
Yeah.
Not even,
not
just,
yeah.
But thanks again, Cam.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And once again, that was Mayor Cam Guthrie. Mayor Guthrie will be delivering his State of the City address for the Breezy Breakfast Club this Thursday at 8 p.m. And for the full coverage of the State of the City as it was delivered last week to the Chamber of Commerce, you can find that over at Guelph Politico. And that's it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The Guelph Politicast is recorded at CFRU at the University Center on the University of Guelph campus. And to learn more about CFRU, go to cfru.ca. You can download the Guelph Politicast on Wednesday from iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify, or you can download it from the host Podbean at guelphpoliticast.podbean.com. You can also subscribe to the Guelph Politicast channel, and you will get an episode of Open Sources Guelph on Mondays and an episode of End Credits on Fridays. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson or at Guelph Politico. Check out Guelph Politico's Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you'd like to help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating to Guelph Politico. And you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.ca, where there will be a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you next week. And until then, see you next time.